It's a hot morning, and look at the faithful who come even in the 90-degree heat. Thanks. Gospel in Glass, this is the last class. You come here next week, you'll get to learn about Light of Life, which is pretty exciting. I'm curious to see how they're doing during the pandemic. Let's start off with a word of prayer. Dear Lord, we thank you for gathering us today. We thank you that where we are, you are in our midst. We pray that what happens here will be pleasing in your sight. And we pray for our friends sick with the disease and so far away. In Jesus' name, amen. Two things to finish off from last week. Number one, about the composition of the transept windows. Imagine you are the artist on day one of the project, and there is nothing here, there is blank space, and it is your job to fill the space. So you've got an artistic problem as well as an architectural problem, all kinds of, but they're not problems, they're situations. The thing is, that center panel is taller. So again, we are so used to thinking of this center box as being part of the window. And I think it was an afterthought, and I think it's such a good solution to the problem that we don't realize it was a problem. With that, if you put the figures in there without those, you've got a lot of empty space. You could put a big bunch of sky at the top. Maybe you could raise those people up and have a bunch of other stuff at the bottom. Maybe put them on little steps or something. Some grass, maybe you could put some design in there. The fact that the artist chose to put theology in there and concentrate our minds that way, we don't really think about the fact you had to be creative in filling the space. This is Hunt Stained Glass Studios doing the work, and they are really not so much about decorative glass. They are about theological glass. And the other thing, I almost hate to go back to this, but if I don't say it, I'll be saying it all night long in my sleep. This is the Old Testament window that's on the other side. And often, maybe I'm the one that started as thinking, it's six men and six women. And that seems to be one way we think about the window. I think the fact we think six men, six women, maybe that says more about us than what is really going on in the window and where the artist's head was. I want to put out another thought of how to think about this window instead of the six men, six women. It's 12 figures, and I think that if you were to write an essay or a speech or an exposition expounding on each of these characters, and you were planning to go on for 5, 6, 7 pages, you've got some space, you'd have to say something about the person. You probably want to talk about their family, their grandparents, their parents, their siblings, their spouse, their children, maybe, maybe not. You'd want to talk about their political situation. What kind of government did they live under? What kind of economy did they live under? What kind of business was going on? What was the weather? What dreams did they have that they couldn't fulfill and that they did? And you'd talk about all that. And what you're really talking about is how did they live in faith under the Old Testament? And I think if you wrote 12 of those expositions, you'd really cover all the themes of the Old Testament, including that these people lived in faith. I think of Isaiah down there. I'm gonna figure out how to use this. Down here, he's holding a picture or something of a lamb. He prophesied that Jesus' death is a sacrificial lamb. That wasn't gonna happen for centuries. And all these people lived in faith, in hope, and it wasn't going to happen for centuries. So when the next generation came along, they said, well, Grandma and Grandpa have been waiting centuries. I guess I will, too. I think it's much more about how do you live in faith. By the way, they solved the problem here by putting Adam and Eve. And again, it's a very brilliant solution to a problem, a situation. Today, hardly any theology, just craft. The craft of stained glass, and it's a tactile thing. I'm wearing gloves today because I'm going to be touching all this stuff, and I hope after the class you come up to and touch it. I don't know. How far apart can we spread? Be grown up about this, please. Glass, very basically, it's silica and sodium carbonate. What I read, and I hate to say this because I'm not a chemist, and any chemist in the room is going to sit there and say, oh my gosh. But if you take silica, it melts at 3,000 degrees. If you add sodium carbonate, it melts at 1,300 degrees. So that's one reason to put it in. Now, all these colors are not coming from pigment. They're coming from chemical reactions in the oven, in the kiln, as they fire the glass. Take the silica, take the sodium carbonate. Depending on the purity, you get glass, just glass, plain glass. And I put up all these other things, turquoise, you add copper oxide, nickel, cobalt oxide, cadmium sulfide, gold chloride, selenium, antimony oxide, chromic oxide, cobalt with potash, iron oxide, sulfur, manganese. It reads like a list of forbidden substances from the EPA, and that's the reason we have very few stained glass manufacturers in the United States today. I think we can only say there are a handful doing this kind of business. Now, in Pittsburgh, we've got at least two shops where you can go as an artist and do small scale work. By the way, if you go, have a good time. You can go for an evening, you spend, I think, $50, $60. For a 2-hour session, you come out of it with a thing that you made, but it's really a lot of fun. Do it. In other words, when Pittsburgh itself used to have all kinds of stained glass manufacturers, but when the EPA regulations came in, it was much better to move this stuff off away from the United States, and it's done other places. Now, blowing stained glass, I know you're thinking, you blow vases, you blow glasses, water pitchers, but you're really, in each case, blowing a cylinder. If you think about the glass starts out as a cylinder. Well, you make a big cylinder. And as the glass is still hot, and you still got it on, running around with a little stick in which you put it in the kiln, you cut it down the middle, cut it down the length of it, flatten it out, and it becomes flat stained glass. Sometimes the chemicals are more evenly distributed than others. Sometimes you really don't want them evenly distributed. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you want it very thick, very thin. We've got glass over here, and you're welcome to come up. We've got very plain glass. But then there's also what they can do, cracked glass. And this one, I would ask you to really take a look. This is from a company in West Virginia, Blanco Glass, and they did this probably in the 1950s. But look at it edge on, because you can probably see it, Bill, that there's a real big bulge here. And when you hold it up to the light, the light comes through differently because of that. Now, when it's in a window, you're not thinking, oh, that's fatter glass and skinnier glass. You just notice that the light is coming through it a different way, and it hits your eye, and I would say it delights your eye a different way. And now we have a breeze from somewhere. Good. I want to apologize also for today, because there's really no thread to this. Today's class is a mishmash of ideas, and I really can't put them all in a nice logical thread. So I'm sorry for the mishmash. All of our windows have been dealt with since 2012. The windows like the one in the back, those from the 1930s, went to H.B. Mertz's shop down in Peters, McMurray. Every piece of glass was removed. It looked like a jigsaw puzzle on your dining room table. That happened to all of those older windows. It did not happen to the transept windows. Those came out in panels These also came out in panels, but then at the shop they went down to pieces. But when they had the panel, they would repair, clean. If there was a piece of broken glass, they would replace only that piece of broken glass without bothering any of the others. When Tom O'Boyle found out I was interested in stained glass, it happened to be about the same time that they were removing the vestibule windows. Those were the last ones to go. And he said, Katie, follow them. What that meant is I got to go down and spend time in the shop watching them do the work. And usually the person I was watching was a guy named Mike McElhattan. He's HB's master craftsman. Really nice guy, very generous with his tools today. We have to give them all back. So if I say Mike, that's who I'm talking about. He's not one of our Beverly Heights McElhattan family, but he knows what he's doing. I want to point out one thing here. As we talk about when the windows come out, you can see that there's a whole panel here, and that would come out as a piece. Obviously, things up here would come out as a piece. Now, these big dividing lines, if you go up and take a look, in our church, they're cast concrete. I betcha that in the old European cathedrals, they're carved stone. It's another way of making this arch into several arches, and always to distribute the weight coming down. We're into engineering how the weight would work its way through the arches. A window is very heavy, and you need to think about how you're going to deal with that. The first thing, when a window goes to the shop, you make a stone rubbing, a rubbing of it. It's very much like when people go to old gravestones and do rubbings of old gravestones. And when I first saw this, I thought, oh, wow, let's just take a bunch of these and have a fundraiser. And they said, you do not want to do that. And if you look over, I've got a couple hanging up there. They're definitely working things. Most of them are on this really heavy paper. They write all over them. They color them. There are little marks. They need it. It records very accurately where what piece of glass is, what color it is, how it's arranged. It really keeps the size. There's no way you, if you, later on they'll create, put the window back together on top of this, so they're definitely doing it to the exact same size. There's also things you can see on here. They'll care about the width of the lead, and that's always marked on there too. The next step is to remove all the old lead. You can see they've got pliers here. If you're old like me, you remember when coffee came in cans with a key, or sardines came in a can with a key? That's what this looks like. He's just rolling, unrolling the lead. Lead that's 80 years old is very, very soft. And you have it because it is soft, because it's malleable, but that also means you can tear it apart. Here he's taking a piece of glass out. And when you're all done, he calls it the carcass. And in fact, down here on the underneath the easel, this is one that Mike has saved. This is a carcass of St. Elizabeth of Hungary. It's from some church here in Pittsburgh. And he redid the window, but he kept the old lead there. And it's sort of interesting. All this lead is not used in the shop. It goes back to a recycler who does whatever it is you do to recycle lead. As he takes each piece of glass out, he's got another piece of glass. If you think of just an oversized piece of glass from a picture window, and he'll put each piece of glass on this tray of a plate glass in the exact same order. Now, immediately he's putting it down freehand, so making sure he's got it all spaced right. Because then He puts it in a water table and it'll sit here soaking for 72 hours. I was surprised, there's no soap. You just soak it. And it really, just soaking seems to take care of a lot of problems. He'll take it out, after 72 hours, he'll take the whole tray, the whole piece of glass, you can sort of see the piece of glass there. And there's another one in the back. He'll take that out and with a cloth wipe down each piece of glass. Sometimes you need a razor blade, but not usually. Usually you just rub it with a good piece of good cloth and off you go. Then comes the fun part. Here he's got the rubbing nailed to the table. You can see some nails. But he's also using the nails to hold things in. Now, over here on the easel, this is a rubbing from a vestibule window. And why it's not on brown paper, I'm not quite sure. But you can see that some of the lead is fatter than other lead. And you can see that here too. Here's a wider piece of lead, narrower piece of lead. It's up to him how he does it. There's no rhyme or reason. I mean, here's a nice long curvy piece. Here's a whole circle. And then you use a lot of, well, here's another curvy piece. He looks at what he's doing. I'm going to do this piece of glass. I'm going to need that around it. He set that piece of glass there. Next thing, he'll probably go over here and figure out how to cut the lead to go there, and then miter it at that intersection so he's got another archy kind of lead. This job, I think, would be the worst job in the world. When you think, in our big back window, we have 4,000 pieces of glass, and doing this around each of them. I'll point this out, too. There's a little Doyle story about this. Jack doesn't know I'm going to tell this. I might not have a ride home after this. So I was at the shop, and I'm watching them do all this, watching Mike do all this. And he kept cutting, and he was, you know, these are a lot of very funny angles where these pieces of lead come together. And I said, and he's got these little pliers, and he cuts it. And then Jack said, how was it beveled? Jack's an engineer. He knows construction. He knows tools. And I thought, I don't know. But Katie, was it like this or was it like that? And I said, so last night when these were in the house, I said, Jack, go look at this. This is how it is. And you have all those questions about beveling. You can answer them this way. We're still married. Do I have a ride home? Maybe. Here's another picture of him doing it as he's a little further out. He's got pieces that he's going to have to cut later. While we're looking at this, I want you to notice this shop is just full of old pieces of glass from other jobs that he pulled out from someplace. And they're all nicely sorted by color. I mean, they're acres, it seems, of these. I asked Mike, do you ever really use any of that? And he said, no. They get a job in, they're to replace some glass. And HB will always say to him, well, you can use some. We've got the glass, don't we? And he'll say, no, we don't. You're trying to match something from 50, 60, 100 years ago. Maybe you really don't have it. You have to go find it. There are a number of glass companies all over the world making different things, and you do your best to match. Yeah.
You mentioned the one color that they found changed over the years, too.
Yeah. I'm not sure of the chemistry on this, and I might be backwards on it. Magnesium. If you add magnesium to glass, it becomes green. I think it becomes green. Is that right? But after 50 years, 75 years, that green morphs into a pale purple. So your job is to replace one of these pieces of glass, and there's other glass in there that's still going to continue to morph as the centuries go on, you know? So what do you try to do? Do you try to go back to the magnesium color that they started with? That doesn't match anything, you know? It's an interesting situation. They don't use magnesium anymore because after several centuries, they realized what was going on. Not a good plan. Do pale green another way. There was also a time he was repairing a window, and he said to me, I'm going to put this piece of glass there. And I said, well, my mind, I'm thinking, no, you're not. That's horrible. That doesn't match at all. But I was a good girl. I kept my mouth shut. And a couple weeks later, I was back at the shop, and he had had the project done. It was sitting on the work table. And he said, see, it's all done. And I'm amazed. He was right. When you're dealing with glass color, you're not dealing with pigment. It's here on the light table in front of you, but it's going to be on a wall with light coming through. You can't really look at the color. You've got to think about the light color coming through. And it's also going to be high up on the wall, maybe 50 feet from your eye. It's going to be different. It puts a different perspective on the artist, what the artist has to think about. Once all that work is done, now here you can see we've got a lot of different sizes of lead. There's a wider piece. I think this is medium, but then it gets narrower, and we even have a skinny piece. But there are also seams where they just sort of touch each other. They're not really together. The nails are only holding it together one way. Take the nails out, the thing's going to fall apart. So the day we were down there, Mike had all these laid out, and he put Tom to work soldering. And there's Tom. Now, I don't know which window. This is one of the windows in the vestibule, and there he goes. I did a little bit too, and Tom and I are, I won't say we were all thumbs, we were not smooth solderers. And then Mike got busy and boom, 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 all done. I asked Mike if he could tell who had, let's say you had a shop of 10 guys doing the leading, if you could look at the leading and know if each guy had a signature. And he said, yes, they do. He could tell who did that kind of work. This is the outside of one of our chapel windows. Those open, and I just leaned out the window and took a picture. The point is, and this would have been installed in 1957, so it's, 63 years old? You can sort of see that 63 years in the elements, you can see, there's the possibility that the cement might come out. There's possibilities here. This was not, the chapel windows were not pulled out, and neither were the transept windows, so the transept windows still have the original lead on them. This is another view of another window. Still, I'm not suggesting there's a problem, I'm just saying this stuff stands up 63 years. Something else HB did in the shop, the side aisle windows and the bottom of the big Jesus window, the bottom panels always open. They're called closers because they're more about closing than they are about opening. The closers we had on the windows were all banged up. After 80 years, they were shot. But HB had a number of closers in the shop from another job. He refurbished those. So, okay, they're not original to our windows, our building, but they are original to the time. These match what would have been there. So if you look at them and the dates seem wrong, well, it's not exactly right, but it's pretty darn close. There's also, in this one, this is on one of the big back Jesus window. I want you to look at this rod going across. These windows are heavy, and they're little copper ties tying it to the wind, tying a part of the window to that. It's all soldered in there. But the rods go into the frame, into the cast concrete. It's another way of distributing the weight. And if you're smart, you put these so they're really not noticeable. Now, I've pointed them out to you, and you're going to really see them. I'm sorry for that. But if you look at that, this is about weight. And the big back window is heavy, so there are some of those. Not all windows need it because they're not all that. They just don't need it. There's another one, another view of it. You can see maybe the little wires a little bit better. I've got that someplace. You want to see it afterwards. The windows are painted. And especially the transept windows and the chapel windows are all painted, every pane of glass. It comes in as maybe a plain white. Here's a big piece of white glass. But look, it's got there's no leading. It's the same piece of glass, but there is shading. Look at the shading down low. There's no leading here. This is painted. The face up close looks a little mottled, maybe. But when you get back away from it, not so. This looks like leading, but it's not. This is paint also. But again, you would have painted that knowing how you wanted the face to do it. In fact, as I look at this, I would imagine that from here all the way up to here is one piece of glass. I imagine this is paint also. Maybe it's lead, I'm not sure. It can go either way. But even things like this on the side, and that's painted. Paint in stained glass is an interesting thing because it's not pigment again. If you're a hobbyist and you go to Michael's, you can find paint for glass, which is not what we're dealing with here. What they do is they'll take a piece of glass. If they want to make a red paint, they find a piece of red glass that's been colored with gold, selenium, whatever chemical makes it red, and they pulverize it. Then, so it's glass. Then you suspend that pulverized substance in something like mineral spirits, even water. Use your paintbrush and you can paint with it. Then glass melts at 1300 degrees. It becomes a puddle. But if you heat it to 1200 degrees, it becomes soft. It keeps its shape. The paint won't run, or the stuff on it won't run. But it gets soft. If you think of a Hershey's Kiss raised to 85 degrees versus raised 120 degrees. When it's soft, the glass on which the paint sits is soft, and all these little pulverized pieces that you've put on top are soft also. They fuse together. At 1200 degrees, all the stuff you used to spread the paint, water, mineral spirits, whatever, alcohol, I don't know, that's burned off. And all you're left with is paint fused to paint. If you go up to any of the windows, try to chip paint, you can't do it. Even the stencil paint is like that. This is stencil paint. There's black in there, you can tell. And all this writing on the label is about the toxicity of the paint and all the things you have to do. A painter is doing this probably with some kind of mask, breathing apparatus, gloves, well ventilated room. Jack and I were very careful. We went with a plastic spoon. We put some of the paint in here so you can see it. It's not dust, and this would be used for stencils. But please do not open this. When anything that has that much stuff about toxicity, forget it. But you can see it pretty well in here. Some of these pieces are bigger, some of them are smaller. And you can see that also on the windows, where it looks like they had really dust kind of paint or more particle kind of paint. This is Jesus who's in the chapel, one of the chapel windows. And again, look at the shading. And if you're doing that freehand, not really understanding how it's going to look on the window as you're 10 feet away, masterful. Each piece of glass has some kind of shading like this. How easy it would be just to have yellow. This gold is even not the same. If you go up there and you think you're looking at a lot of lead, you're also looking at a lot of paint. Some of these lines that might be lead are not, they're paint.
That's more on the ones that Hunt did more, than on the ones that Pittsburgh Stained Glass did.
Yeah, right. But Pittsburgh Stained Glass stenciled everything. Almost every piece of glass. Now this is on the one of the aisle windows. There is freehand painting, but not like there is in the later windows. But this is all stenciled, and it's smudged. Now you can see this piece coming down here. And there's a piece up here. That's not a stencil. Somebody has very artistically dipped their finger in the black paint and smudged it. And all of this will then have to be fired to fuse the paint. Now, stencils in stained glass are backwards. In fact, here's the stencil for the blue. Can you tell? When you're doing a stencil on your wall at home, you would put this on the wall and paint and pull your stencil off. Not so in stained glass. Stained glass, you paint the whole glass black or whatever color you want. Put the stencil down. Not exactly organized here. And then take a brush and knock out all the paint that shows through the stencil. So it's backwards. Cute little paint. Oh, another thing. This is Mike's favorite paintbrush. It's got badger hair. And it is so soft. It's 30 years old. Okay, I'll tell you. It's $250 30 years ago, one paintbrush. Be careful. They've got a lot of stencils. They save all the stencils. In the old days, stencils were made out of tin, and that's hard, very hard. Your hand hurts. These are all made out of manila folders. Got different ways of cutting. I don't know. That's what they do. They do a lot of different jobs. If you look at this stencil, it's a baseball diamond, literally. There's a ball and a bat in the middle of it. I don't know where they did that. Who's got a stained glass baseball diamond someplace? This stencil here is that little thing right there. So some of these look like cut glass, but it's not. It's stencil, again, all different colors. The glass is colored, but always they were using black stencil paint, every piece. And probably this glass is very uniform in color if you had it pre-stencil. Go up and touch it. It's pretty cool. Here's a stencil, and there's an itty-bitty piece of glass. I think we might even have this itty-bitty piece. Yeah, this one, there's a piece of tape holding it together, so they would have had to make us a new piece of that. And that's how involved the stencil is for that. When you're up here later, you'll see a lot of these have BH on them. Guess what? Beverly Heights glass. Another thing about this is that there is a, this is the big window in the back. And there, if you look carefully, right along the edge is a really skinny piece of glass, all the way around, really skinny. The point being that when they installed the glass, they thought they'd be helpful to the people who were going to restore it 80 years hence. The idea was that is really cheap glass. Nobody cares about it. It matches. But the idea is you break that piece, and then you can take out the glass. Well, nobody wants to break 80-year-old glass intentionally. I mean, after all, it's antique. So they figured out how to do that. So what should have been broken and replaced, still original. More of the glass they had. I can't believe I left out cementing. When the lead is on the glass, you need something to hold it together. And what they do is they take putty, and you feel it in the plastic bag. It's nice and malleable. And you take this pencil-y side kind of tool, wood with a sharp, and you push it everywhere between the lead and the glass. It dries, it hardens, and you're good to go. Use a brush to wipe off the excess. Mike says there are 4 touches for each piece of glass, and I think he's wrong. He says you have a touch when you take the lead off. You have a touch when you pull it out of the soaking and you wipe it down. You have a third touch when you put the new lead around it. And you have a fourth touch when you do the cementing. So if you take the 4,100 pieces in the back window, you're up to what, 16,400 touches. But I say it's really 5 or 6, because when you cement one side, then you cement the other side. So that, to me, cementing is 2 touches, this side, that side. And I also say you have to touch the glass when you're doing the rubbing. 6. Makes it look like he does a lot more work. If he's content with only doing 16,000 touches, I've got him up to 24,000, and he says I'm wrong. So what do I know? When I was at the shop, I was amazed at how little electrical tools are used. There's a soldering iron. There are fans, air handling, the light table. They've got a sound system for their playlist. That's about it. Really good lights. Not a lot of electrical stuff. A lot of fans to blow air if you're doing leading, cementing with the dust. You would want to do that. Let me think, was there one other thing? There's a tool at the end. It's called a FID, F-I-D. I'd love to know where they got this word. It's made out, the one we've got here today is made out of plastic, but they are also made out of bone. And the point is, it'll work if you've got a piece of glass like this and you've got a piece of lead with this kind of an opening and you want to make that opening a little bit bigger. You can use that to shape the opening of the lead so it wraps around the glass if you're looking at something like this with varying thicknesses. Soldering gun. What was that? Oh, the lead. I've got lead in a plastic bag for you to look at. Different thicknesses. It is lead. It's toxic. It's not a good idea to touch it. We do have gloves if you want to touch it, but it's in a plastic bag. You should be okay. I think that's about it. Questions? I do not know.
The renovation was around 9 months.
9 months?
From back in.
No, I do not know. Pretty cool. Tom, can I ask you to close us in prayer?
Sure.